I did another kind of bucket list thing on our new menu, and that's having dry aged duck, like in-house dry aged duck.
Oh, cool.
And it's been awesome. It's been like, one of the cool things about having a small group is that the students get way more reps than they would when it's a large class. And then with the ducks, this was something, I think we talked about it when, like when I was at Naramata and we were doing a recap of my time there, I had mentioned that they had access to nice dried ducks from, the name Yarrow Meadows, I think somewhere near Abbotsford. Anyways. But then I had a couple conversations with one of the sous chefs there about how he used to dry age duck in house at Bishop's in Vancouver. I did one test of that last year and was like, can I really put this on the menu? Like, can we actually keep up? We just have one cooler that's dedicated for that we have available for dry aging. So I was like, in terms of the time processing the ducks, the time hanging the ducks, all the trim that results from it, like, is it realistic to put this on a menu? But yeah, we're trying it.
Where are you getting the ducks from?
They're pretty conventional. They're King Cole, which is a producer in Ontario.
Okay, so you're getting them frozen and then you're thawing them and then dry aging them?
Yeah. Thawing them.
I've never done that before. I would think that having them pre-frozen would make it so that they would lose a lot more water a lot more quickly or something like that.
It could be. At any rate, the breast that we, so sorry, the process is, thaw the ducks, convert them to crowns, which just means like you remove the legs, those are going to be confit, remove the lower back, like the lumbar region of the back, and remove the wingtips and drumettes. So you end up with like the top half of the carcass with the two breasts, with the two drumettes attached, and impale it on a S-hook and hang it in a cooler. Even if it being previously frozen isn't optimal, the breasts that we harvest from those aged crowns are so much better than the individually packed and frozen breasts that we would usually be serving. The skin especially, it's such a huge difference in the skin because it...
In terms of it rendering and becoming crispy and
So it's only been 2 weeks. And we've been kind of living hand to mouth. Like it's like our sweet spot for aging, like we like 6 or 7 days just for these ducks and for who we're serving and everything. So we've had to, we haven't always hit that, hit the 6 or 7 days. But now we're starting to, it's selling very well and we're getting, I don't usually flex like this show, but I was really arrogant in the class orientation. I was like, I think,
you were arrogant?
Yeah.
That seems unlikely.
But when we were doing the menu orientation and I was talking about how we're going to attempt to dry age all our ducks, I was like, I'm going to guess that this is going to be one of the best pieces of duck that most of the people who order it here will have had in their lives, just because it's not as common here anyways to get duck that has been aged like that. And we've had a handful of customers tell us or confirm that. So I was... my arrogance was validated.
Well placed.
Anyways, it's just fun. It's like to see them, like, cause that means the rotisserie station, like they're cutting ducks every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it's like every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, another case of ducks comes. And, and it's just, I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah. That's cool. Hopefully you don't run out at some point.
Yeah.
Is the cooler at regular fridge temp, like 4 degrees ish?
Yes.
Or is it?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Dang. I'm tempted to come by and try one. If I can get a seat. Probably can't. So many events and so many bookings.
Yeah, it's busy. But yeah, there's usually... Oh, I'm sure they can sneak
figure
you
it
in.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come to the back door.
Yeah, maybe I'll wait until next term when hopefully you have the right number of students. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Food Court. I'm Shale McDonald, and I'm here with my co-host, Alan. I'm going to try again, sir.
It's your first day?
Welcome to Food Court. I'm Shale McDonald, and I'm here with my co-host, Alan Sutterby. Hey, Alan.
Hello, Shale.
We're two chefs in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food, and we love to talk about it.
Nailed the landing.
Finally got there. Another episode of Food Court. What episode number is this, Alan? I don't even know.
Feels like 200.
Just kidding. Not quite. Haven't quite cracked 100 yet. Mm-hmm. Getting there, though, this year.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Do we have any follow-up?
I have something that is follow-up, but I don't think it's actually, I don't think we've mentioned it explicitly on the show, but it's follow-up between you and I, you and me.
Oh, okay.
Right before Christmas, you made a faux foie gras potted concoction.
Oh yeah. I was going to ask you about that. And then, I was going to ask you about it last episode and then it like slipped my mind. Mm-hmm. And then like this week I was like, oh yeah, I have to remember to ask Alan about that. And then somehow I didn't like write it down when I was like making notes for this show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I make little notes to remind myself to bring things up or little ideas that I have about whatever topic we're going to be talking about. I'll just like jot them down.
Yeah.
And for some reason I didn't jot it down. And for some reason it completely blanked again. And yeah, so I was going to ask you about that.
So do you want to tell people what the project was?
Sure. Yeah. So I don't know, at some point before Christmas, I got recommended on YouTube a video about like, a faux foie gras. It's like a vegan version of foie gras. I think it's from Chef Steps. What is that?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. It's from Chef Steps. They have a YouTube video about it, for how to make it. Mm-hmm. And it was just interesting to me. The texture and the color and stuff looked really close to like a foie gras pate. Mm-hmm. And better than a lot of I've seen actually. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I wonder if it's actually good. And so I wanted to try to make it, to have like, we usually have like a bit of a charcuterie board. Those are very popular these days, Alan. I don't know if you've heard
charcuterie.
Yeah. We usually do like a little bit of a, yeah, like spread of cheeses and breads and crackers before we have our Christmas dinner so people can kind of graze. Mm-hmm. While the hot food is being prepared. And I think last year I did some kind of like maybe a pork rillette or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was like an actual pate. And yeah, I've been doing some kind of like, you know, cold preparation like that usually for that every year, just like not necessarily on purpose or because I feel like I have to, but just like around Christmas time when I'm getting inspired to cook things, I'm like, oh man, I haven't made this in a while, I should try that or something like that. So mm-hmm. But yeah, this year I saw this video for like this vegan foie and I was like, huh, that looks interesting, I'm curious. Now's a good time to sort of try it out, but it requires the use of gelan. Mm-hmm. And gelan is, I mean, it's like a modified starch. It's, you know, it's used for gelling things, but there are two different kinds, and but they work sort of in combination with each other, and in most applications, in most recipes. It's used to, because like if you gel things with gelatin, they have this sort of like bouncy kind of rubbery texture. Mm-hmm. If you gel things with agar, they have this sort of like, I don't know the best way to describe it, but it's sort of like brittle.
Yeah.
It's the gel kind of like breaks up when mm-hmm. when you cut it with a utensil, or when you put it in your mouth, it sort of like breaks into like little shards.
Yes.
And gelan, using the two different kinds of gelan, allows you to like find a balance between those two textures.
Okay.
And so it's particularly useful in an application like this pate because you don't necessarily want the bounciness of gelatin, but you don't want it to feel like breakable either.
Right.
But you want it to be, you know, well, I guess, set, you know, in a way that's like spreadable and stuff. And so achieving that texture is kind of tricky with conventional kind of like gelling agents and things like that, especially ones that would wind up being vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed some gel end, but to buy gel end, you have to buy like the most ridiculous quantities. So I hit up Alan to see if they just happened to have any kicking around in the labs, in the cooking labs at Nate, and they did. And Alan recovered some for me. And so I was able to make that test, and I made quite a bit. So I was able to give some to Alan to try out. Cause you had expressed some interest in like potentially having it as like a vegetarian or vegan option for like a cold dish on the menu at Nate or something, or for events or something. I'm not quite sure what you had in mind.
We've experimented with, what we were billing as, vegan, pâtés. Like we had a mushroom pâté on one menu,
right.
But it used agar and it was pretty good. And it sold surprisingly well. I was skeptical at best, for its chances at moving, but it did.
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was a fun idea for a vegetarian vegan appetizer.
Yeah. So I made enough so that you could try some.
And what's the process in a nutshell? Like it's the fat content is coming from coconut.
Yeah. So it's basically like the structure or the main part of it is cashews, which have a fair amount of their own fat in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flavor comes from mushrooms and shallots and, you know, like sort of normal things that you would wind up putting in a pate, whether it was meat or vegetarian, the aromatic part of it. And then the rest of the fat comes from, coconut oil. And basically you have to soak the cashews overnight, which is like pretty common. Cashew is like usually a stand-in for creamy things in vegan cooking a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. You can make like cashew cream that you can basically use as like the component where you would use like heavy dairy cream in a sauce or something like that. You can make cashew cream that works like pretty well as a substitute. And you soak the cashews overnight and then blend them and you get this really smooth, creamy texture. We used to use part cashew milk as like the base for our non-dairy ice creams at Kind.
Okay.
We moved away from that because of nut allergies and things like that. But
right.
It works really well as a stand-in for like rich dairy. So you soak the cashews overnight and then you cook off the aromatics. And then there are a bunch of spices included in it as well.
Yeah.
Spices that would sort of be traditional foie gras spices. I think in this case, they leaned a little more towards like kind of Christmassy spices.
Yeah.
And I think this was meant to be sort of like a Christmassy thing for their website or something.
Okay.
But yeah, and then you just put everything in the blender, and then while it's blending, you add these small amounts of gelatin, and then they get hydrated in the blender, and then you basically blend it until it boils in the blender. You start with it hot, and then you put it in the blender, and then you blend it until bubbles start to come up in the blender, and that ensures that the gelatin is like hydrated and activated, and then you quickly pour it out into molds, and then the gelatin sets up pretty quickly, so you have to be pretty quick about it, but you pour it out into molds, and then they top theirs with like some like vegan butter substitute. They didn't really do anything to flavor it or anything. And since I wasn't going to be serving it to vegans, I just used actual butter, but I flavored it with a little bit of like orange and and some spices as well. So yeah, what did you think?
It was delicious. The texture was wonderful.
Yeah, I thought it was delicious too.
If it's meant to look like foie, I didn't consider and take notes on this. Like, was the color, the shade Was it pretty, it seemed pretty close to foie, maybe not as
it's pretty
yellowish,
close.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think if it's not as yellowish, it might be because the fat was less yellow mm-hmm. than it would be. So you just don't get quite as much. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not quite as yellow. But you could adjust that. Like,
oh, of course, yeah.
The way the recipe is, like, you know, what you put into it kind of colors it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, most of its color is coming from the cashew and stuff like that. But, mm-hmm. yeah.
The texture was wonderful, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the very smooth, rich, creamy, like, even the kind of melting quality on the tongue, like... Yeah,
yeah,
it definitely, I would love to do a side-by-side.
I think that's because of the coconut oil. Mm-hmm. Like the coconut oil is like a saturated fat, same as you would get, mm-hmm. you know? And so it melts in your mouth in that same kind of way. You have to use refined coconut oil in order for it to not taste like coconut.
Mm-hmm. It did, and yeah, so yeah. Flavor-wise, I loved the spice. Like I thought the spice was excellent. Like it was present, not overbearing. It was nice. There was definitely good savory notes, I guess, from mushroom mm-hmm. shell to nuts and all that. There definitely was a background, like a faint coconut flavor. But I think
that's
that,
interesting.
Like, if it, or maybe it was the cashew, but like there was something about the not meat-like, I guess, like mm-hmm. as a background flavor.
It definitely has its own, like its own flavor characteristics that don't really... There is some meaty flavor, like there is some umami flavor there, provided by like the mushrooms and stuff. And I think, I'm not positive, I don't actually remember, but I think I don't think their recipe uses like actual MSG, but I think I put a little bit in with the mushrooms when I was cooking the mushrooms and stuff, so.
But yeah, it tasted wonderful. I would happily eat that. On brioche, vegan brioche.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. I thought it was really good. I think, like, if anything, to me, the spices were a little cloying.
Oh, really?
I think I might back off just a little bit or change it up just a little bit. I'm not sure what. I have to go back and retaste it, but I think I might like tone down a little bit or like. Spice it a little bit more savory or something. Like I think that the spice combination that they have is pretty dessert like and that's
depends on the
that's
application,
actually like,
right? Like
yeah, and like that's pretty common for actual like foie gras pâtés to have those sort of like sweet spices, but I think I just might back it off a little bit or something, or add another spice that's a little more savory. You know, where it implies a little bit more savoriness.
Right.
But yeah, I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Success.
So are you going to try it in your restaurant?
We have to give, I was going to say you have to give me the recipe, but I guess I'm just supposed to Google Chef Steps faux foie now or?
Don't.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're a Chef Steps member, they don't actually list the ingredients.
Oh, okay.
And a Chef Steps membership is like, not insignificantly priced. Otherwise, I probably just would have like bought one for a month or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I looked at it, I was like, wow, like that's pretty pricey. And so I couldn't get the actual like weights and ingredients off the Chef Steps website.
Oh, okay.
But they do list everything in the YouTube video.
Right.
I can't remember if it's in the comments. I don't think they list everything in the comments. I think in the comments it says go to the website. And then when you go to the website, it says
give us your menu.
Sign up to see all the ingredients. Which, smart, good on them. But I think like if you watch the YouTube video, in combination with watching the YouTube video, you can collect all of the ingredients and all of the accurate weights. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they mention them all in the YouTube video.
Okay.
You don't have to like drive subscriptions on YouTube because it monetizes itself based on people watching the video. So I guess they feel like it's okay to just put the recipe in the video, but you kind of have to watch the whole video to collect the recipe. And I did that work. So I can just send it to you.
Awesome.
Yeah. it was not insignificant. Also, like in the recipe, they use another recipe, another Chef Steps recipe. It's called like sweet spice or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I tried looking that up on the Chef Steps website, and it also wanted me to subscribe before I could see the ingredients list. So then I had to go look for the Chef Steps YouTube video for the sweet spice. And then...
And is it so much different than French quatre épices, or like, is it just
it's not.
Cinnamon, yeah. Black pepper and stuff?
Cinnamon, black pepper.
Allspice or clove?
I think it's clove and star anise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I think I might back off the star anise a little bit too. Hmm. I don't know. I wasn't like, the star anise didn't seem overpowering, but a couple of people who ate it were like, oh, it kind of tastes licorice-y. Oh, and right. Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. There is definitely star anise in there. Didn't taste licorice-y to me because I guess like I'm more like, I don't know, like it takes a lot of star anise for it to start to taste licorice-y to me. But I think some people are really sensitive to that flavor. They don't really like it.
Right.
And so if there's a little bit of it, they pick up on it right away. Mm-hmm. So I might back that off just a touch too, but.
Well, I liked it just the way it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have like exact weights for everything for just the way it was. So I'll send it to you.
Awesome.
Alan.
Yeah.
When's the last time you went to Bon Mi Cali?
Maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Okay.
Why do you ask?
Well, I don't know if I told you about this or not, but I went there on my own one day, like a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was probably about four, maybe 5 weeks ago. And I kind of feel bad because I don't have all the information in front of me, but there was a gentleman working in there that I'd never seen in there before. Mm-hmm. And he was quite chatty.
Okay.
Which most of the people that I've encountered when I've been in there just like take your order and make it to you and hand it to you and don't really say too much. Mm-hmm. He was like kind of chatting me up. He was like, oh, have you been here before and stuff like that, and he was asking me some questions. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I've been here a few times, and I really like the bread and the sandwich fillings are great. And he's like, oh, that's good. But he sort of like relayed a story to me about how apparently he's the owner or part owner, mm-hmm. or something. And the unfortunate part is I don't remember his name off the top of my head. And I don't really have a reliable way to look it up. Mm-hmm. If I can look it up or something, I'll put it in the show notes. I'll try and put a link to their social media in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But he was saying that, like, he opened it and then he got sick and then wasn't able to work for, like, quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so he had, like, some family helping him out and friends and some other people that he had hired sort of, like, doing the day-to-day there for, like, quite a while, like, almost a year or something like that. And most of that year span was when I had gone in and tried it for the first time and... Mm-hmm. And then some subsequent times, and then, you know, the time that we went together as well, like, he was just not around. When I talked to him, he had only been back for like a week or something.
Okay.
And, he just seemed very, I don't know, what's the word? Like, eager and like very excited and enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. About, you know, what they're trying to do there. And it was like, I don't know, it was just a really cool interaction.
Yeah.
And then the sandwich that I had that day when I went was like, I mean, not twice as good as any of the other sandwiches that I've gotten there. Like, the bread was still similar because they've been baking the bread in the same way and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, you know, felt like a little better constructed. A little less, like, some of the vegetables were a little less, like, watery and juicy and, like, a little more just, like, integrated into the sandwich. It just felt like a little bit of a better sandwich than I've gotten there before.
Oh, really?
And so I was really excited about that because, I mean, it seems right now, like I think he was telling me that when he started out, things were going really well. But then when he got sick, it's sort of like, you know, they lost some of their regular customers and stuff like that.
I see.
And he was sort of like in, to use the sports metaphor, in a rebuilding phase.
Right. Yeah.
Or something.
Mm.
That metaphor seems to be popping up for me a lot lately. But you know, he was just really enthusiastic about what they had. And I think, like, you know, a little bit of my experience of going there has been like, wow, the menu is like really limited.
Yes.
And that's obviously in comparison to like Nan Hua or some other banh mi shops where they just have like every possible you know, like it's a pretty tight group of sandwiches that they have there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like that makes more sense to me contextualized with like this sort of like chef owner kind of idea of like, he wants to focus on a few things that he knows that they can do really well and things that they can produce themselves and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. It was just really good talking to him and I had a really good sandwich and I was just wondering if maybe you'd been by there and had a sandwich recently or talked to that guy. And when I was talking to him about it, he was asking me like, I think why I had come in or something, or if I,
what are you doing here? Or, just kidding.
Sort of. and also he was like, oh, you know, like you should, you know, if you had a good experience, I'd love it if you like talked us up on social media. And so
okay.
I was like, oh, well actually like I have a podcast and we've mentioned your shop on the podcast before. And you know, like we have an Instagram account. I think I told him, our Instagram handle so that he could check it out. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have pictures of their sandwiches on there or anything,
no.
But, and I was like, you know, and a friend of mine is an instructor at Nate. And like, I know that he comes by here and I know that he's told me before that some of the students from Nate come here and stuff because it's pretty close by. And
mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're looking to build your, patronage, you know, you might consider, I don't know, advertising to the Nate students or mm-hmm. doing something, you know, like doing a promo for Nate students or something like
right,
that.
Yeah. Cool.
So we had a good kind of little chat about it.
That's cool. I was there, it was either late November or early December. And the guy who served me, I'm pretty sure it's been the exact same guy every time I've been there.
Okay.
And he's
yeah.
friendly and I've chatted with him a bit, but he's not like one to spontaneously make small talk.
Right.
And so I don't think I've spoken to the same gentleman you did. But mm-hmm. yeah, I'm going to check it out. Cause if it, like it was already a great sandwich. And so if you think
yeah,
it's that much
pushing
better,
that quality. Then, yeah, exactly. That's exciting.
Did you talk about head cheese with him?
I don't remember if I asked him directly if they're making their own head cheese or not.
Mm-hmm.
I did ask him a couple of questions like that, but I think it was mostly around the bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't talk forever about it either. I was just kind of like grabbing a sandwich and taking off. So
okay, well, I'm going to try and broach that subject with him.
Yeah, the head cheese thing is still ripe for discussion.
The bread is obviously made there. You can just like, you can see the equipment. You can smell it. It's yeah. so good and fresh. The head cheese, I'm fascinated to know if they make it because I haven't seen mm-hmm. that style anywhere else in the city. So
yeah.
Cool. Can I...
We have more follow-up? We have more sort of follow-up?
It's a follow-up in that it relates to something in the past. I'm just kidding. I think I promise, Shale, it will segue into what we would like to talk about principally. But this story starts last year. Last year,
okay.
My daughter Cora was in grade 2, and they did this class project where they're going to write and illustrate a book and then have it actually published, like bound in I think in hardcover and made so that everyone in the class could get a copy, buy extra for family and stuff like that.
That's okay? Cool.
Every kid was going to do one page and each page would have their writing and their something they drew on it.
I see.
And the name of the book...
Was this supposed to be a cohesive story or each page is its own self-contained story?
I'll tell you what the title of the book was, If I Were the Principal... So each page,
God.
The kids would write like, if I were the principal, we'd go to the swimming pool every day and there'd be no mm-hmm. homework and We'd have hot dogs for lunch. That's actually what I would have written, but that's not, none of the kids said that. That's what I would have written. But it was like that.
I think it's so, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. And this is obviously like a really stupid digression. But like the idea of the principal as like
the guy who makes all the rules,
a figure of authority, and the person who like makes all of the decisions about what goes on in the school is so like hilarious to look back on as an adult and just remembering what my like idea of who the principal was and what the principal did, it's like they're like, I don't know, in the mind of the student, they're like the authority over the students or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I guess in a way that is part of their job. Like there's like a certain amount of like disciplining students that I think tends to be a part of a principal's job, but
that's usually like, the vice principal, Shil.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
The vice principal is always the hard ass.
The one that everyone's afraid of. Yeah. Like, it's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird to think about it. And my dad was a principal for most of the time that I was growing up. So I sort of have a unique perspective on this because, like, you know, like, I think when I was, like, a student, I put a lot of, like, my... my student interpretation of what a principal was, like, onto my dad in a way or something, you know, like, it was hard for me to separate that out, you know, like, I knew him as my dad and it didn't, you know, and I was never a student at his school, but it still, like, I knew that he was a principal and I knew, like, what my concept of a principal was or something. I don't know. Right. It's weird and like difficult to tease out, but I just think it's so funny that there would be like the concept would be that like if I got to make all the rules, you know,
if I could do whatever I wanted, principal, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Like the principal is God and they can just like, you know, make up, you know, and the fact that you have to sit and learn math for like 3 hours, that's the principal's fault.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah.
I just find that so hilarious. Anyway, we can move on.
There was, it's been ages since I read it. There was a lot of like, you know, yeah, we would go to the playground more. We would go to the pool every day. There was a really good one where a little girl said like, I would have a magical talking fox and stuff like that if I were the principal. because the principal is omnipotent and can create things like that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But can create magic talking foxes out of thin air.
What was really... Okay, so I was reading them student by student. And then I was reading one and it was a boy in the class and he said, if I were the principal, I would wear my Prime t-shirt every day. And I was like, I don't know what that is. That's
what does that
oddly
mean?
Specific. Read a few more. Another young boy... If I were the principal, I would drink Prime every day. And sure enough, in the illustration, he's wearing a shirt that says Prime on it. And I'm like, okay, this is odd. And then it happened a third time. A third kid wants to drink Prime every day. And I didn't even know what that was. And so
I
looked it up and it's a drink that was... Not developed by, but was promoted by a famous YouTuber.
Okay.
And I think there's like Prime energy drink and then there's Prime, I don't know, hydration drink or something.
Okay.
But these kids in grade two were like, I mean, whatever, this is what all marketing is, but they're brainwashed into thinking that, like, even though they're not even old enough to drink the energy version, I should think. Brainwashed into thinking this is the coolest thing ever.
Alan, if energy drinks aren't like a subversive way to like get kids into drinking caffeine, I don't know what is.
But I mean, yeah, to have it turn up in that project and so like it's like the targeted demographics, like boys between the age of like, what, 6 and 12? Like, what the?
Oh my God.
Anyways, yeah. And so I pointed this out to Lisa, and like, we were kind of joking about it and everything. And then when I was opening my stocking this past Christmas, sure enough, Lisa bought me a bottle of lime flavored Prime. I think it's the hydration one. I don't think it was an energy drink.
Right. If it's lime flavored, then that's probably the hydration one, because it's probably, you know, like trying to be Gatorade.
Yeah. And so I tasted it this past week. And I don't drink, I drink Powerade and stuff every once in a while, but I don't drink energy drinks. But that's, yeah, it reminded me of, like, to me, it was actually quite a constant, like a rather intense, similar flavor. I don't even know how to describe it. I was not a fan. Maybe I, like, it's, yeah. Anyways, it was a funny Christmas present and a weird, it was so odd to see it, like, come up, so many times with so many different kids, specifically saying, like, so that would be one of the most important things in their lives.
Right, yeah. When, there once was they one have of the things that would stick out in their head about their principal so much,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming then that their principal had a Prime t-shirt, and they saw their principal wearing a Prime t-shirt, and they were like, oh, that's cool, because I know what that is because I saw it on YouTube. And that's why it's stuck in their head or something like that?
Oh, no. They definitely did not see their principal wear a Prime shirt. They have a Prime shirt, and they're so proud of it. They're saying that if I could do whatever I want every day, I would wear my Prime shirt because it's the coolest thing that I own. But my mom doesn't let me wear it every day because she says that I have to wash it.
My mom tells me that I have to wear a different shirt.
Yeah. Definitely the principal of the school has not worn a Prime t-shirt. Yeah. And I doubt that he drinks Prime. But okay, so the segue, Christmas gift, food Christmas gift. Besides Prime hydration liquid, I got another present from Lisa. I got some Momofuku noodles. What are they? How do they build them? Instant? They don't call them instant noodles, do they?
Do they? I thought maybe they did.
But the Momofuku Asha collaboration, dried noodles with flavor packets that has been the algorithm has been targeting ads at me for the last couple years, and David Chang was just like in all of my social media feeds telling me that ever since he became a dad, he's been trying to find better ways to feed his family and stuff. Anyways, I got those noodles. And I tried them and I shared one with you.
Yes.
And this is going to be a jumping off point for a noodle conversation, or we're going to,
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I hope so. Otherwise that whole segue went nowhere. Mm. Yeah. So, you gave me a pack to try. I think it was the, what, spicy chili. Yeah. And yeah, it's basically a sort of like instant noodle, like it comes in like an instant noodle pack, mm-hmm. like an instant noodle type pack, like packed the same way, like in a little plastic package. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you cook the noodles in a similar way. I don't know if they're all like this, but they're not really soup. And so you cook the noodles in a small amount of water and then you get rid of most of the water. Mm-hmm. And then you add in a flavor packet, which was liquid, right?
Yep.
And then you have like a bowl full of saucy noodles. And then they tell you that you can top it with other condiments and toppings. And they suggest like
Momofuku brand chili crisp.
Chili crisp. They recommend, Momofuku brand chili crisp. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they recommend scallions or not, but I definitely chopped up some scallions and put some on mine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I feel like if like, I don't know, like if it's David Chang's intention to make it easier for people to have like a bowl of noodles that's like a little bit closer to what you might get in an actual noodle restaurant or something like that and be able to prepare it easily at home, I'd say it was like pretty successful. Mm-hmm. It's better than most of the like instant kind of stir fry noodle things that I've had. Mm-hmm. But I would also say that I've had instant ramen of like, you know, different varieties and stuff like that, that is like, has, I think, better flavor packets and things like that in it. Mm. Better, more interesting flavor packets and things like that. And so I wouldn't say that it would immediately, if we're making a, okay, I don't know why I didn't think of this, and it probably would have like required some homework. Maybe there's room for us to do it in the future, but we should probably make a tier list of instant noodles. Mm-hmm. Like,
like a bracket?
All of the instant noodles that we've had and put them, yeah, put them in a bracket, tier bracket.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, I was going to say, I wouldn't necessarily immediately put these as S tier. You know, like S tier would be like some of the imported packets that I've had from Japan, or like, you know, some of the Korean ones that, you know, like come with like, it's like a bigger puck of noodles, and they come with like oil, and they come with sauce, and they come with, you know, like mm-hmm. there's some crazy ones out there. And I don't know for me if these would be S tier.
I can infer what S tier means, but I've never heard of that before. What is that referring to?
Honestly, I haven't the faintest idea, but if you've, there's like, yeah, there's like a practice of like ranking things, mm-hmm. On a tier list. It's pretty popular on YouTube, and it's sort of like spread out onto the rest of the internet. But basically, okay. S tier is the highest tier. And then below that is A, B, C, D, E, and F.
Okay. Does S stand for supreme?
I guess so. I don't actually know. I think I tried to Google it once, and maybe I didn't get a clear answer. And so I was just like, oh, it means a different thing for everybody or something.
Okay.
But yeah, but S tier is like, yeah, supreme or super
superior.
Or superb or superior or yeah, okay. Exactly.
I was surprised that the noodles themselves, they were not, I was expecting like ramen shaped noodles, but mm-hmm. the Momofuku ones are, I don't know if there must be a, this is a Asha, the actual producers of the noodles are Taiwanese, I believe. So
right.
Perhaps it's a traditional noodle shape in Taiwan, but they're basically the shape of tagliatelle. Like they're about three eighths of an inch wide and then very flat, much, much longer than Italian tagliatelle. But yeah. So, and I can't even think of like having had stir fried noodles or soup noodles that are that shape. Not that it's right. a big deal, but I can't think of where I would have had that shape.
I think I have had noodles that are this shape before, like in Asian cooking, but I can't remember where exactly.
Like some of the hand cut noodles at Northern Chinese places like Noodle Feast are that dimension and flat, but they're not nearly this thin. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, right.
Like they're yeah. a bit chunkier.
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, I think that's the thing. And I'm not sure, but like, you know, I think that that's probably because it seems to me that these noodles aren't, I have had like quote unquote instant noodles that have like a similar texture when you take them out of the package to these, but it's not the same texture as like that deep fried ramen noodle, mm-hmm. like the truly like true instant noodle. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't seem like it's undergone that same process.
No.
It seems like it's undergone a different type of drying process. Like it's not,
that's one of the like, keys of their marketing campaign is that it's air dried, never fried or something like that. Yeah.
Never fried.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that makes sense. And it still cooks really quickly, like 3 to 4 minutes. Also, I'm not positive, but I think they may have more than one noodle shape.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, well, just because the instructions on the package say if you have like the scallion noodles or the spicy chili noodles, mm-hmm. cook them for this long. But if you have the other kind, you have to cook them for like a minute longer.
Oh, okay. Or something. I have two comments there. First, I actually got each bag has something like, I can't remember, 6 packets in it or whatever. And I got a bag of the spicy chili and I got a bag of the soy scallion. And I was like, okay, well, first I'll try one and then I'll try the other and then I'll have tried both and I can compare them. So I started with the spicy chili. And then the second time I went to eat it, I was like, okay, I guess I should try the soy scallion now. And then I saw the spicy chili ones in the cupboard, and I was like, I mean, how could the soy and scallion ones be better than this? So I had the second time I had the spicy chili again.
Spicy chili again.
And then the third time that I tried these noodles was actually for breakfast this morning to prep for this. For this conversation, and I had the spicy chili because it's so cold outside. I just needed that soup that would give me the satisfying,
Alan, I'm shocked.
The little nose.
You should have forced me to eat the soy scallion ones if you knew that you weren't going to be able to bring yourself to eat them.
So once it's like Halloween candy. Like once I eat all of the best stuff, once I eat all the S tier stuff, I'll move on to the A tier stuff until, you know, it's 6 months on and all I have is Aero bars left.
Yeah, exactly.
But my second comment is that, yeah, so the cooking instructions say 2.5 minutes, maybe longer if you prefer a softer noodle. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just white trash.
Two and a half minutes does nothing to these
noodles.
They're
crunchy. They're still crunchy after 2.5 minutes. So
yeah,
I do 5 minutes.
Like right.
Yeah.
I think maybe part of the idea is that like you're going to wind up continuing to cook them a little bit after.
Okay.
And so, you know, by the time you add in the sauce packet and get them out of the pot into the bowl, they will have kind of been cooking for like 4 minutes or something like that. Mm. But yeah. Even at 3 minutes, they were still, I wouldn't call them al dente. I would call them like the inside was still a bit crunchy. I think I boiled mine for like 4 minutes or something and then took them out and sauced them and cooked them a little bit in the sauce and then they were good to go. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yeah. I think the cooking instructions are a little bit of a lie, which
hot
is,
tea. Yep. Shots fired.
You know, not like I feel confident getting a good noodle texture out of whatever and not reading how long I need to cook something for. Mm. But most people won't do that. Most people will be like, okay, 2.5 minutes, set my timer, ding, 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 ding. Okay, put in my sauce. Okay, here we go. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people who follow the instructions on the bag for these are going to have like a pretty subpar experience. Mm. And I don't know. I just like that doesn't, that seems... I don't know. I don't know David Chang, but it seems un-David Chang like to like beat around the bush like that. I don't know why. I don't know if he approved those instructions. I don't know what the situation is, but like he usually seems like a pretty like when I see him preparing food in videos, he seems like a pretty straight shooter.
Oh yeah.
He's like, most people tell you to do this, but really, you know, like,
oh yeah,
you actually have to do
that's
this.
The entire tone of the Momofuku cookbook is like like in the the recipe for his ramen noodles in the cookbook, it's the entire, there's like an extensive preface that's like, you really do not need to make these noodles from scratch at home. They probably won't even end up being as good if you just as if you go and buy some quality lo mein noodles. Like that's what I would recommend you do, but if you have to do it, here's how we do it or how we've tried to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And then, so the flavor packet, I should have expected this because of, you know, the bold flavors of, David Chang restaurants. I was surprised at how intense the chili heat was in the noodles.
Yeah. They really are very spicy, like bitingly. So almost, you know, like that, like, you know, like, it's kind of nice. Like you wouldn't expect that from an off the shelf product where you like sit down and you feel like you know, maybe ordered like, I mean, they weren't uncomfortably spicy for me, but I'm sure that for a lot of people, they would be uncomfortably spicy. Like for a lot of North Americans, they might wind up being uncomfortably spicy. And then like, sorry, I shouldn't say North Americans because I'm lumping in Mexicans. And Mexicans definitely eat spicier food than I do on the daily.
For people of European descent, like, it could I could see it being very
sure that works. But yeah, like they were, it, you know, like spicy enough that like, I think, you know, some people might sit down and eat that bowl of noodles and be like, oh, I should have ordered the mild.
Right. You know? I should have ordered two peppers instead of three. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Which was a nice surprise. Yeah. Like it's nice that you can just, you know, like have an off the shelf noodle that will provide that, like, you know, that punchy experience, mm-hmm. which is cool.
The first time I ate them, it was kind of like our vanilla ice cream discussion. Like I wanted to just have them plain, like noodles and mm-hmm. sauce to see what it's about. And so, yeah, it was pretty intensely chili laden. I think that if you were bulking it out with veggies and stuff like that, it would probably temper it a touch. But what I've done the last two times I cooked them, I know that this is not the type of noodle that you would serve in soup, but I've kind of made noodle soup with it. So I like,
oh, really?
For breakfast this morning, I had some homemade turkey soup that I boiled the noodles and then I heated my soup in a separate pot. And then I put the noodles, the flavor packet, and the cup of soup in the same bowl and mixed it up. It was delicious. Like because I was using very good quality turkey stock shell.
Right, of course.
But yeah, the heat when it's diluted like that, and you can slurp it alongside the noodles, was really good. But can we talk about, surely there are textbooks written about this, but you know how, like, mm-hmm. I'm somewhat familiar with the Italian tradition of, you know, this noodle goes with this sauce or this meat for this reason. And I'm sure that there's a noodle culture at least as nuanced in Asia.
Yeah.
But it just dawned on me today while I was eating, okay, I'm on not a noodle quest, but like I'm just eating out at a lot of noodle shops. And I was just thinking as I was making this noodle soup this morning that these broad noodles are not usually what are served in broth. They're usually slender noodles. So you think of like ramen noodles or the Sichuan noodles we had at CQ, pho mm-hmm. noodles. They're fairly thin, right?
Yeah.
And when I think of how these soups are intended to be eaten, like with the noodles being picked up with chopsticks, this is my theory of why soup noodles are thin in Asian cuisine.
Okay.
Because when you pick up the noodles with the chopsticks and they're draping down, they're quite close. The noodles stay quite close to each other. Mm-hmm. And the adherent properties of water mean that it gets caught up within all those noodles and makes like a kind of like slurpable liquid that's ascending with the noodles into your mouth. Whereas if you have mm-hmm. these wider, slightly crinkly, looser noodles, like the Momofuku ones, you don't get those slender pockets of broth that like stick in the noodles as you're slurping them up. Is that crazy?
Right.
Does that sound... You have more surface area with the slender ones. There's more room for broth to get stuck up in it. What is that?
I definitely agree that is a real phenomenon mm-hmm. that you're talking about.
Okay, but
there are quite a few exceptions that prove the rule, though. Like if you're talking about how like that's a thing in Asian soup noodle culture, there are quite a few exceptions to that.
Lanju noodle. Damn it.
There's a yeah.
Yeah, of course.
there's udon.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, a big chunky thick noodle that doesn't like stick together in that way that you're talking about. But that's like, you know, udon is like basically, in most cases in Japan, only served in soup.
Okay.
There's a Vietnamese soup that isn't as popular in Canada, or you don't find it in as many places. But it's got like a thicker round style of rice noodle that's more similar to like an udon style noodle. Mm-hmm. One of the incarnations that I'm aware of that soup is bamba hui, mm-hmm. which is I don't know what region it comes from, but it comes from like sort of a different it's more popular in some regions of Vietnam than like pho is. Mm-hmm. It's like more their dish or whatever. Okay. And it's yeah, it's like a thicker round noodle that has like similar characteristics to like udon, where the soup doesn't really stick in the noodle. It tends to be a little bit softer, I think, too. And so like you do still get that slurpability, but like, but yeah, definitely like a little bit, you know, different in that way. So I think that there are different approaches to that, but I definitely agree that like, you know, having longer, thinner, straighter noodles like allows you to get more broth while you're eating your noodle soup.
Mm-hmm.
Another, I don't know, this is a bit, I wouldn't call it a topic switch, but it, like, I mean, okay, so I guess like another comment that I have about the Momofuku noodles is that, you know, I think it's very simple, mm-hmm. right? Like there's one packet and it has the spicy sauce in it. There's no extra garlic oil packet, or I don't know what comes in the soy scallion one. I don't know if the scallions are like in a separate packet or what, or if they're just in the sauce packet or something. I don't know if the scallions are dehydrated and you put them on and they get rehydrated while you're cooking or.
Yeah.
But to me, the spicy chili noodle, yeah, it was just like very simple, not a lot of like, I would have kind of assumed that there would be some kind of extra garnish or something that you would put on top afterwards. You know, nice that they make some recommendations for how you can garnish your noodles. And like, honestly, in most cases, when I'm making like an instant noodle packet at home or something, most of what I'm going to do to those noodles is going to make them what the dish is, yeah. Not, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm not usually just cooking
stuff to it, right?
Yeah. I'm going to add stuff to it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe that's Chang's idea, is that like, we're just going to make something really simple. So you have a simple noodle base, but then you can add things to it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really stated like that in any of the marketing material that I read, like aside from the fact that they recommend some extra condiments with it or whatever. Which I did try. I tried it on its own first, and then I added some, I have some chili crisps, so I added some chili crisp to it.
You added chili crisp to the spicy chili noodles?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was pretty spicy.
Tough guy, yeah?
I mean, chili crisp is not that spicy. It's like, you know, there are definitely, you know, it's a pretty mild spicy kind of thing. I don't know, honestly, if the sauce on the noodles was spicy or like, do you think like if you add something that's like slightly spicy to something that's like really spicy, do you think it makes it spicier or do you think it tones down, tones down the spiciness? I'm not sure. I haven't really experimented enough with that to like.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder if, cause like the flavor packet, the spicy chili flavor packet is like water-based, and then you have chili crisp, which is oil-based.
Kind of? Yeah.
I wonder if that,
yeah.
But also like the chili crisps don't, most of them usually have a little bit of Sichuan pepper as well. Right. So you get a little bit of the kind of numbing sensation. And I think it would make it a more intense experience, but
yeah. It was pretty intense. But yeah, I just like the simplicity of it kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and like it tastes good, but it's not like hitting you in the face with umami or something like that, which I would sort of think that like would be the intention for Chang to like, you know, really like make something that's going to just be like, you know, really going to pop or really going to like smash people in the face. And it was a little more simple than that, a little more like, and I don't know, like maybe that's better, you know, maybe that's better for more people to be able to enjoy it or something like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think there was something about it that like, I don't think I'll ever make it plain again. Like I will never not add something else that I have on hand to it. Whether it's like, yeah, leftover bits of meat and vegetables and stuff like that. Like on its own, it tastes fine, but it is, I was picturing it being like, yeah, like I can sit down at this, like with this bowl of noodles and it will really feel like a hearty full meal. And it is.
Like it'll be a meal.
It is in the sense
but
of
it's
the
really,
portioning
it's like
and everything.
Side.
But it's like a starting point, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and in terms of like the number of components, that's what instant, like the Mr. Noodles and stuff is. It's like, it's the noodles in the flavor packet. And maybe you're usually more, you're more likely to eat those in the, like in soup, like in liquid from the powder packet. But yeah, even then, like having the broth there, like there's something about that that makes it eat more like a meal, even though you might throw other stuff in it too. But
yeah. The other sort of like comment that I have is that, I mean, I guess, you know, you're saying that part of the idea with these noodles is that like David Chang was looking for maybe like a little bit of a healthier way to have an easy meal for his family or something like that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think they, like, they're certainly insinuating that they're healthier than fried noodles. And I guess right. I don't actually know if that's true. That's what the kind of prevailing wisdom in food nutrition is now, but that's definitely the heart of one of their marketing points.
Yeah. Which I find interesting because like, I recently rewatched an episode of Mind of a Chef, where David Chang, goes to, Tokyo, I think, with Peter Meehan, and they eat a bunch of ramen, and then he makes some food out of instant ramen packets on the episode. Mm.
In Japan
and
or in the States?
In his like restaurant, I think, in the States or something, or in a cooking studio or something like that. And well, interestingly, actually, they talk in that episode quite a bit about how for a lot of ramen, the noodle is made specifically for the type of broth that is in that soup or whatever. There's quite a bit of there's a little bit of conversation about that because they go to a Tsukimen shop in the basement of Tokyo Station, which I actually ate at.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize this, but I was like looking for places to have Tsukimen when I was in Tokyo, and this place kept popping up. I think maybe I found a website that said that Bourdain had eaten there or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I should go check this place out. I wound up eating there twice because it was so good. And then I was watching this episode of Mind of a Chef like a few days ago, and I was like, whoa, that's that same shop. Mm-hmm. But it is really good. But they have like really thick noodles there because you're dipping them in this like the noodles are maybe not cold, not chilled, probably like room temperature or slightly above, so that they're like still pliable. Mm-hmm. And then they're served with like hot broth, but it's like a really thick broth, and so you take these thick noodles and dip them in the hot broth and eat it that way. Mm-hmm. Like the noodles don't come in the broth,
right?
And the broth is like too thick to house the noodles. It's like more like a sauce almost.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, in that episode, David Chang is like talking about his history with instant noodles, and he makes some dishes out of like regular instant noodles. And, you know, like one of the things that he talks about is like when he grew up, his like after school snack was taking a raw packet of like instant ramen and just putting sprinkling the powder packet over top of it and eating it like potato chips.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you definitely could not do that with these noodles. Like,
oh, right. Yes, of course. Because they're not fried.
Because they're not fried. Mm-hmm. Which I think is interesting because, I don't know. I mean, people change their minds about things all the time. You know, like, it's okay for David Chang to say one thing one day and the next day be like, but there's also this other thing that I like or this other thing that I want. Like, you know, I'm not saying like, Chang's a flip-flopper or something like that. But I do think that it's like a little bit unfortunate that like it's not available for that because, right. You know, like.
What are we going to garnish our Asian-influenced appetizers with? If not with.
Right. With smashed up fried instant noodles. Yeah. But I mean, obviously that makes for like a better structured noodle in the finished product too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that you could do these noodles in the, like the fried fashion and still have them like have that kind of like chewy texture in the middle when you're done cooking them. Mm-hmm. Like it just wouldn't, it's just not really a thing. Mm-hmm.
The thing that I was actually, what I actually wanted to say, but I just couldn't think of the dish. I was like, oh no, what are we going to garnish our Thai chicken bites with now? That's what I was thinking of.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think it's probably all over the place, but like I'm thinking of like Thai chicken bites at Boston Pizza circa 2005. That's where the garnish of...
That's where you would see smashed up fried instant noodles as a garnish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or in a fancy Asian-inspired salad at Earl's or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or in your basement after school when your parents aren't home yet.
Right. And you're not old enough to boil water.
Yeah, exactly.
Or too lazy to boil water if you're a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. Or you don't, yeah, you just don't understand why it would be better to boil the water.
Where do we go from here?
Well, firstly, thanks a lot for sharing your Christmas present with me.
Oh, no problem.
I'm glad I got to try that. I'm kind of like at first I was like, oh, I should just order a bag of these. Because they were like pretty good as like a base starting point for making a lunch or something like that. But I don't know. I'm kind of flip-flopping on it. I think I might want to try the other kinds just to see what they're like. Mm. See if my like interpretation holds, like if there are more garnishes with some of the other kinds. Or I'm really curious, like with the scallion one, like whether they're like freeze-dried scallions or whether they're like not dried, but they're just sort of like preserved in the sauce or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what that's like.
I'll report back. I was just picturing a liquid packet, just like the spicy chili ones that is in that has,
it scallion has scallions in it.
Yeah, but I'll get back to you.
Yeah. I'm curious to try the other ones and see if my assertions hold about like how simple it is. Mm. But yeah, generally, I would say it's like a pretty good, easy starting point for like a lunch or something like that.
Yeah.
Not sure if it, again, not sure if it would be S tier instant noodles, but definitely a pretty good instant noodle experience, I would say. Mm-hmm. I just think that, like, I guess for me, I feel like there are a lot of better experiences than this to be had just by like picking up a packet of like dried noodles and a couple of ingredients at the Asian grocery store that like is in no way more complicated than doing what what you're doing when you're taking one of these packs out. Like, I guess maybe like the soy and the and like a couple of like aromatics are already in the flavor packet. Mm-hmm. But you can buy like basically flavor packet ready like liquid in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, but like you mean, lots of different varieties.
Yeah. You're right. In terms of the actual cooking, you're saying if you went and bought a bag of like Farke noodles and a flavorful sauce, you're already at the same starting point. And so in a way you mean exactly. Like this is like a marketing thing where it's like, we've taken like the thought out for you because it's individual size packets and very specific. I don't know. Yeah. You're right. I do understand the appeal of the like of the marketing that they're doing. But yes, you're for anyone who's comfortable cooking, you're 100% right.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is you're not going to do any more cooking.
Yeah.
You just have to be a little bit comfortable with like making a decision about what you're going to cook.
Right.
Ahead of time.
And how much you're going to put in the pot and stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I suppose that's true. Yeah. If you go buy noodles at the grocery store and a flavor packet, it doesn't necessarily come with like a single set of instructions for how to prepare it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a thing. But then I think if you're willing to take that step to like go buy a packet of noodles and something to flavor them with, even if it's an instant flavoring or something that you buy at the Asian grocery store, like if you're willing to take that extra step, there are so many better noodle options than this. Mm. You know, like at just about every Asian grocery store, there's like a whole ton of like dried noodles that don't take any longer to cook than these would. Mm-hmm. And then, but there's also like a whole bunch of like refrigerated fresh noodles that like basically last forever in your fridge. They're like, you know, like they're, you would want to eat them like, you know, sometime in the couple of weeks after you purchase them, but it's not like, you know, I mean, they're maybe not a pantry item, mm-hmm. and which you can get. And you know, like even for ramen noodles, like I have in my cupboard right now some dried ramen noodles. They're not as good as like actual fresh ramen noodles, mm-hmm. but in my opinion, they're better noodles than what came in this, in these packets. They're kind of a different format. They're skinnier. They're for, you know, putting into soup. Mm. But, you know, when I cook them, I think that they wind up having a better texture than the noodles that came in the Momofuku packets. Right. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess the simplicity and the ease of use for people that absolutely don't want to have to think about that at all. Yeah. Totally, you know, like it makes sense, but yeah, if it, you can get the same thing, but like with a much greater variety,
and
if you
and a lower price,
are just willing to buy two items and cook them instead of one item or something,
right? Yeah.
So, I want to try the other kinds, but I'm not sure that I would, you know, like be willing to like. Order them and pay, well, I guess there's free shipping on them if you order enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if it's worth it, like, you know, to get them shipped here to me directly when basically they already exist in the grocery store, just not on the shelf, mm-hmm. in the same packet.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah. But yeah, let me know when you try the soy scallion one because I'm curious.
Okay.
The other thing that this kind of got me thinking about a little bit is that I feel like, well, like this and then watching the Ramen Mind of a Chef episode that I just watched and stuff like that. Mm. Well, there's a couple of things. The stuff that Chang made with the instant noodles on that episode, mm. was pretty interesting. Mm. He made like basically a pretty traditional cacio e pepe, but using instant ramen noodles, okay. Yeah. Which is hilarious, mm-hmm. But probably delicious. Mm-hmm. And then he also like took a packet of instant ramen noodles and cooked them in milk and then blended the whole thing in a blender and turned that into gnocchi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like it was thick enough out of the blender to be a dough, or he had to add flour to it?
No, he just used the instant noodles and a pretty small amount of milk. Maybe. Did he add something else to it? I don't know. I don't think he thickened it with anything else, although he may have cheated. It's hard to know.
I just can't picture something like, coming out of a blender that's so thick that it could be shaped into gnocchi.
Well, it's like piped gnocchi.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, so he puts it into a piping deck. Like, it's thick enough that he can pipe it out of a piping bag and cut off segments.
Oh, right into the water. So, like, yeah. Like as you would cook gnocchi parisienne, right?
It's yeah. Gnocchi parisienne. Yeah, for sure. It's not, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you know what else
both
works?
Both of which I thought.
You know what else works? Flour.
Well, I think, yeah. Totally. Although, like, he made a good point, and that's that, like, you know, the flour that's in the instant noodle, mm-hmm. That's been fried is modified, right?
Okay.
So you have a bunch of modified starch, and so that is going to give you, like, a different sort of set of textures, mm-hmm. than you would get. And then also because the noodle is fried, and I don't think he really said this, but, like, because the noodle is fried, it contains a certain amount of air.
Okay.
You know, like, because the noodle puffs, mm-hmm. when it gets fried, and that's the reason why it, like, absorbs liquid so readily and is able to be cooked so quickly. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of, like, little air pockets inside the, or, like, little, like, microscopic voids inside the noodle. And I think that probably winds up giving you, like, a lighter gnocchi dough. I don't know. You would never do it.
Right.
He was just doing it for fun,
yeah.
because he was like making stuff with instant noodles and talking about instant noodles. And he named his restaurant Momofuku after the inventor of instant noodles.
Yeah,
and so, you know, like he's got a fascination with it. And so it was just like a bit that he was doing for the show. Yeah. But like, you know, I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I've been like thinking about messing around with instant noodles a little bit in that way, just for fun. Mm-hmm. But like the thing that I kind of like, or like one thing that I wanted to touch on is that I feel like ramen in Edmonton is like kind of finally having a moment or something.
Oh, really? Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it may be a little bit of a controversial statement, but I think that like, so I don't know what was it like? It was like almost 10 years ago now, where there was like some actual restaurants that were just ramen restaurants mm-hmm. that opened up in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of like a fascination with ramen in Edmonton mm-hmm. it started to like percolate. But at that time, like 10, 11, 12 years ago, like there wasn't really any place that you could go in the city and get good ramen. There were a few. I feel like the state of ramen in Edmonton at that time or prior to that time was like, if you wanted a bowl of ramen, like ramen that would be similar to what you would get if you went to a ramen shop in Japan and ordered it. Mm-hmm. The only options were like sushi restaurants. So quote unquote sushi restaurants mm-hmm. That would like have a bowl of ramen on the menu. Mm-hmm. And like, this is like a Canadian version of a sushi restaurant that isn't actually like really a sushi restaurant. They primarily serve sushi because that's mostly the Japanese food that people in Canada have heard of, mm-hmm. but they also have like
some rice bowls and some.
Yeah, exactly. They have like tonkatsu, like pork cutlet on rice and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So they have like, you know, a bit of a wide variation of like Japanese dishes. Mm-hmm. But usually the restaurant is called something sushi, and, you know, and then it's just sort of has like mostly sushi, but like a bit of a wide variety of Japanese dishes. And sometimes on those menus, you would find ramen, mm-hmm. which I hadn't eaten ramen in Japan. Obviously at that point, I'd never been to Japan. Mm-hmm. I kind of had an idea in my head of what it was supposed to be like. I'd had ramen a couple places in Vancouver that I think is closer. There were actually some ramen shops in Vancouver, but like in the Prairie provinces, that just didn't really exist at the time. They started to pop up in Calgary a little bit mm-hmm. around that time. And I had some pretty decent bowls of like pretty decent, you know, in retrospect, bowls of ramen at a couple places in Calgary, but in Edmonton that just didn't really exist for like quite a while, until about 8 or 10 years ago, when there was like a bit of a, I don't know, like that was like around the time of like Momofuku starting to get popular and people hearing about ramen in like, yeah, in like foodie media. Yeah. Yeah. It was like a bunch of, I remember there were a bunch of stories written about Ivan Ramen.
Yes. Yep.
At that time.
I think,
who was like,
if I remember right, the Momofuku cookbook was published in 2010 or thereabouts. So I think that for
right,
us
yeah.
outside of New York and stuff like, that was a huge, yeah. For cooks my age anyways, like that was one of the first cool cookbooks that everyone wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. So like for cooks and foodies, there was sort of like this ramen moment mm-hmm. in Western culture in like, you know, yeah, about 10, 12 years ago, something like that. And at that time, there were a couple shops in Edmonton that started like either, you know, like didn't have ramen before, but added ramen to their menu because people were asking about it, I think. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of ramen shops opened, Prairie Noodle probably being the most widely known in Edmonton, which was, you know, like I would say a really good shot at making something that was like a fairly traditionally focused ramen, but with like regional influences.
Right. Like Canadian Prairie regional influences.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's, yeah. You're right to disambiguate that because regional sounds like I'm talking about Japan.
Right. Yeah.
And then I can't remember the name of it right now. Oh,
the first one that I ever
had brought.
Went to more than once around that time was Nudoru on White Avenue.
Right. Well, I think Nudoru came a little bit later. Didn't
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that I ate there before my first kid was born. So that would have been before 2015, but I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it definitely came a little bit later than Prairie Noodle, yes, but maybe only 2 years after or something like that. Yeah. And Nudoru, I also thought was pretty decent when it opened. I went there a few times, like a little bit later on, and I felt like, you know, it wasn't quite as on point, but you know, they were making their own noodles there. Like they had like a noodle machine in the back and they were making their own noodles, and it was pretty good. I think like they're closed now, but I don't think it was because they started to suck. I think it's because COVID just made it impossible for them to operate a shop just selling bowls of soup out of like a pretty expensive space on White Ave. Is probably what happened there.
So where is it happening now? Tell me about the moment.
Right. So I'm finding now though that like, you know, like there was a moment back then, but it was like, it just didn't quite happen, you know, like it didn't quite fire up to the extent where we then had like, you know, a bunch of ramen shops that you could choose from and, you know, maybe more than one of them, you could get like a decent bowl at. But in the last couple of years, like a lot of izakayas in the city have started to like actually do ramen in like, you know, a more sort of intentional way, you know, not just having a bowl of ramen in case people ask about it, but maybe having a couple different kinds and, you know, like taking some care with it. The ramen at Dorinku, Tokyo, and I haven't had the ramen at Dorinku Osaka, although I've seen some like people talking about it that say it's quite good. But there's a couple different kinds of ramen at the original Dorinku, and I've tried two of them and they were like pretty decent. Like, you know, not like the best bowls that I had in Tokyo, but definitely ramen,
right?
Like for sure. Yeah. Like satisfying and umami, and the noodles were like, you know, nice and chewy and not overcooked, and you know, like it was definitely a bowl of ramen. And like, you know, I'm seeing like a lot of other Japanese restaurants starting to just like have actual ramen on their menu. And I can see why, you know, if you're like, if you have an izakaya or like a quote unquote sushi restaurant, why putting ramen on your menu wouldn't necessarily make sense. And it's also complicated and it's hard to cook. It's a lot of, you know, like it's a lot of work to make it good. But yeah, I just think that more people are aware of it now and more restaurants are like, oh, you know, like more people understand what this is supposed to be like. And so it's not useful for us to put a bad version of it on our menu.
Yeah.
And so like, there's actually a good version of it showing up on a lot of menus. And there are a few more like actual like ramen shops opening up in Edmonton. Like when we went for, Chinese noodles last week at
CQ. Yeah.
CQ. Yeah. There's like a ramen shop right next door to that. It's called
Misoya.
Yeah.
I think that's a chain, which I'm not.
Yeah.
Not saying that's good or bad.
And I haven't eaten there and I don't really know if it's good, but it's just a shop that actually serves ramen.
Yeah, there's a few actually, because you had texted me and asked if there was Japanese restaurants recommendations.
Yeah, I think so. Because I was asking for a friend.
And there's a few, little Japanese places on White that I've never been to, but I always walk by it. Like Solike was one. I don't know if it's still open, but in terms of the like quality handcrafted like dedicated ramen shops, is Tokiwa number one?
Yeah, and so then there's also Tokiwa, which opened what, a few years ago, like maybe 3 years ago or something like that, two or three years ago.
Longer that recently? That. Was it during?
No, you're right.
It was before the pandemic, I think. Yeah,
So like, yeah, 4 years ago, I guess, maybe 3 to 4.
And the kind of place that, you know, only has a certain amount of product, and when they're out, they're out. I don't know if they still do that, but that was what they were kind of, one of the pieces that they were known for is that like, you got to get there early or you won't get anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And they still operate that way. I don't know. I've been there pretty late in the afternoon a few times. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not open in the evening, I don't think, but I don't think they sell out as much as they used mm-hmm. to. But yeah, Tokiwa, definitely. And there were a few other, like Nudoru closed, but there are a couple other places that are like basically ramen based, that some of which I haven't even tried yet. I know that there's a place on White Ave. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head mm-hmm. that I haven't tried. I have tried another place. It's not actually a ramen shop. It's like a Japanese food restaurant, but they have a bowl of ramen. I ordered one from Skip the Dishes the other night, and it was actually pretty good. It was like, I think it was a miso broth. Mm-hmm. Oh no, I ordered Ten Ten Men. So it's like, it's kind of like a spicy, it's got a little bit of like sesame, kind of like thicker sesame kind of soup based vibe. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty good. Like they delivered it to me with the noodles separate and it was like satisfying. So I think it feels to me like more places in the city are starting to take ramen a little bit more seriously. Is Tokiwa number one? I'm not even sure anymore. I've eaten there a few times. Like, I mean, their tonkatsu broth is like pretty good. It's like pretty, I think you can get worse bowls in Japan,
right?
You know, than you can get at Tokiwa. I'm not in love with their noodles, but yeah, generally I think their soup is like really good. And there's actually like a place on the West End, Kazoku maybe. Yeah, Kazoku. They've been open for quite a while. And I went there like kind of quite like a few years ago, and it was good, but not as good as Tokiwa. But I've heard like better and better things about it lately. And then sort of like the main one that I wanted to talk about isn't even a restaurant, but there's like an Instagram account called Casey Ramen. Mm-hmm. And it's a couple of people, and they make their own broth and their own noodles in like a shared like commissary space somewhere on the south side. Mm-hmm. And they have a website, and you can go on their website and order like it's basically like a ramen kit. Okay. To take home, and you prepare it yourself. Right. But it comes with like ajitama, and it comes with, you know, like pork belly and mm-hmm. all of the like, you know, and they do like several different varieties, and they have like, they usually every week they have like, you know, like a special one that they haven't done before, or like they've done a chicken and duck paitan before. They like, I don't know. They just like every week they're like experimenting with one, and then they have a couple of standards mm-hmm. and it's definitely the best ramen that I've had in Edmonton.
Oh, okay.
Like it's better, I think, than Tokiwa.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think right now there are a lot of options to get reasonably good ramen, and a couple options to get really good ramen in Edmonton. Mm. I don't know. Like that little bit of sort of like ramen revolution that happened like 12 or 13 years ago. That was sort of like a food trend based,
yes,
sort of like percolation of ramen culture into Edmonton. Yep. This one feels like a little bit more organic. Like it's still food trend based to some extent. I mean, most like things are where, you know, a food becomes popular in a place, like, you know, that's the very definition of a trend. Mm-hmm. But like this time it feels a little bit more like it's just like, maybe not just foodies are aware of it.
Right.
You know, maybe it's like a thing that like, you know, just like regular diners are like, oh, ramen. Like that's a thing that I thought was like instant noodles, but really it's this like really, you know, this really rich, hearty, like satisfying dish that you can have. And it's like, you know, great winter food. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just catching on. And that makes me kind of excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the start of that trend, In a lot of ways, like, yes, there were a few shops that opened up, but in a lot of ways it was like home cooks who were interested in it. Like, people were really interested in doing the ramen yeah. process beginning to end at home because of access to information online and, say, from Momofuku and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's part of my recollection of it, is like going to a friend's house because he's got sous vide pork belly and he's going to put it into his,
yeah.
his, you know, 48 hour tonkatsu and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. One thing that I haven't mentioned that I definitely should mention is that, a chef in the city, Chris Tomke, yes, for a long time had a series of ramen pop-ups, mm-hmm. That, yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, like, and that was really good as well. Like, he was putting a lot of effort into it, and I had some really good bowls of soup at some of his pop-ups. I would say, though, that, like, the way that KC Ramen is doing it is, like, you know, like, Chris, it was like an invite-only kind of, Chris Tomke's thing was kind of like an invite-only kind of thing, mm-hmm. and there weren't usually a lot of seats or a lot of bowls. Mm-hmm. It was like for one night, and there would be like, you know, a total of like 40 bowls available or something like that. And that was it. And then you wouldn't know when the next pop-up was going to happen. But the KC Ramen thing, like, that's happening every week. Mm-hmm. And you can just go online and order it, and it's really good. Mm-hmm. You know, so you should order something from KC Ramen.
Add it to the list.
Or I should order one for you, since you were so kind to share your Momofuku noodles with me.
I had a bowl of ramen sitting on a bar stool at a counter in H Mart last week. You know, H Mart has a ramen
really?
Counter. Yeah.
How was it?
It was serviceable.
See? Yeah.
Like, it was, I got tonkatsu and the broth was milky white. Like, I know it's always opaque, oh, yeah. but it was like white.
Yeah.
And it was,
that sounds like a lot of the bowls of shio that I had,
really?
Like, a lot of the bowls of shio ramen that I had in Japan were like a tonkatsu broth, but like light, like not quite as like reduced maybe, and then seasoned with salt. Mm-hmm.
This one, like, it was quite, it was yeah. flavorful, but it definitely didn't have the like lip smacking reduced stock kind of vibe to it.
Right.
And yeah, had a nice slices of pork shoulder, and could have been a little hotter, to be honest, shio, but It was
oh,
minus
no.
40 when I was there, outside, not in the soup, but yeah, it was like for eating lunch in a grocery store, it was just fine.
And like, that's kind of what I think. It's just sort of like popping up everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, like you can get it everywhere, and it's not just like chicken soup with noodles in it,
right.
you know, and they're calling it ramen.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, yeah, like emulsified pork broth and like, you know, mm-hmm. real actual ramen things. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to Food Court, a podcast recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Food Court is hosted by Alan Sutterby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan and Shale McDonald. Make sure to subscribe to Food Court in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or in your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram @foodcourtpodcast. If you want to spread the word, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.